Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
Hales.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
WBSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
And welcome back in. It is the third and final hour here on Monday morning. And it is time to turn on the light. We have Jack Spillane of New Bedford Light joining us. Before we get into that, though, I just want to remind everybody or let you know in case you're just tuning in for the first time this morning, we do have a new contest up at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app where you can enter to win a pair of tickets to see the Doobie Brothers on Monday, August 12th. At the Xfinity Center in Mansfield, the Doobies are coming, and we've got some tickets to give away, so you can enter to win at WBSM.com or on the WBSM app. It's brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven, the home of the Purple Dot, where you can try before you buy. And I know I had said on Friday I was going to have the contest post up so people could start entering, but I didn't get to it. I didn't get it up till yesterday, so I just want to remind everybody that it's there. So are you a Doobie Brothers fan, Jack Spillane?
I like the Doobie Brothers. Not my favorite, but I like them.
Yeah, I like some of their songs, but were those not working? They were, I tested them before. They were
scratchy coming in and out.
Well, I mean, let me know if you have any trouble with them. The important musical act, though, for this time is not the Doobie Brothers, although I do want people to enter that contest, but the important musical act Mondays at 8 a.m. are the Rolling Stones.
Could I think, get high on you, sweet honey.
And I want to start off by asking you about something that was, somebody suggested that we ask you about it because it was a topic of conversation this morning, but I don't know if you were following along with the news about the Buzzards Bay swim over the weekend.
I have not heard that.
So the Buzzards Bay swim was canceled on Saturday.
Oh, I did hear that, yeah.
Because of the expected high level of CSOs in the water. And Jonathan Darling, the spokesperson for the city, put out a statement saying, you know, that the rainfall was below the threshold, that they should have been concerned. So the beaches were open on Saturday. They ended up having to close them on Sunday because more rainfall on Sunday brought the levels of CSOs up. But that this is the first time that the Buzzards Bay swim has been canceled in 31 years. And they seem to be diplomatic about it. But some people are saying, well, did they have to cancel if the city didn't close the beach? Or was the city wrong for not closing the beach if the Buzzards Bay swim canceled? So as somebody who's been following the CSO issue, you know that this has been something the city's been trying to remediate.
Oh, yeah. It's a multi-year process, though. Multi-decade process. $500 million, $500 million process to separate those CSOs out. It is hard to believe that in 31 years, just statistically, that there hasn't been another rain event on the day of the Buzzards Bay swim. And so if this is the first time they had to cancel it, had they been swimming through the Guck at other times? I don't know. Yeah, it seems like it could have been handled better. I'm not totally up to speed on this, so I don't want to go far out
but,
on a
but
limb.
But you know the history of what's been, you know, we just talked about this with the shell fishing issue recently, that it has been something that is an ongoing, they're working on repairing it, but it's not going to be something that can be fixed overnight.
Yeah, like every other city on the East Coast that's on the waterfront, New Bedford has a problem with combined sewer and water outflow, which means that when there's a big rainstorm, the water pipes go into the sewer pipes, and then the reverse. The sewer pipes go into the water pipes, and then the outflow goes into the harbor, and that makes it contaminated. We know a lot more about contamination nowadays than we did when they built those things 130 years ago. And so we're trying to separate them out, but it's a billion-dollar project with a B. And the federal government and the state government give the city money and other cities on the shore every year to separate these out. But it's going to take, my understanding is 30 years to get them all separated. I think they're about 10 years in, something like that. So it's a problem.
And the Environmental Protection Agency is keeping a close eye on the city and the things that are going on. So, like, the city has to handle things in a way that will appease them. And if the city says, that the beaches are open, I trust that the beaches are safe to be open.
Yeah, I mean, all within reason. That the city disagrees with the EPA sometimes, and the EPA enforcement tends to be maybe a little more assertive in Democratic administrations than Republican administrations. It's a complex issue, and there's a lot of moving parts to it. I do wonder about the swim. They could have had it. It sounds like if they did it that first day, I thought that what I had read was that at the last minute they said it's on and you can do it, but that they had already said that it was canceled. So
if they did, I didn't see anything about that part of it.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Before I was out of town over the weekend, but just before I left, I thought I had read that they had put it back on, but I could be wrong about that.
Have you ever swam Buzzards Bay yourself?
I can barely swim, so...
Yeah, I don't know that I could do that. I've swum across some of the ponds in the Miles Standish State Forest, yeah. But I don't think I could... That's nice, calm water with no tide. I don't think I could do the Buzzards Bay swim.
Yeah, I've done a pond or two in my time when I was younger. At this point, I think I can probably barely swim across my sister's pool in Ground Pool.
I've reached the just sit in the water stage of my life. There's a... What am I going to swim for? I'm fine. I can stand up and walk out of the water if I have to.
Yeah. I do like the water, though. And I like to be in it, especially when I'm in Florida, although you have to be careful in Florida because there's more sharkies down there.
I'm a pool or a pond guy. I'm not an ocean guy. So no salt water for me. There's too many weird things walking along the bottom that I got to worry about. Nope. So I want to talk to you about some stories that have been in the New Bedford Light over the course of the past week. Last week, there was a story, and we touched upon it a little bit here during the week in the morning, but there was a story that the high school is considering banning cell phone use during the day, that they're going to get these pouches for the kids to keep their... you and I, we went to school at different times, and when you went to school, there wasn't probably even a phone in the classroom.
No, there was barely a phone in the building.
And... when I went to school, we had the phone in the classroom, but it wasn't like you could just go and use it anytime you wanted. But we started getting the kids that had pagers. I had a pager when I was a senior. And so your parents would page you and you'd be like, can I go call my mom? She's paging me. And they even considered then saying to kids, you can't bring the pagers into school. But cell phones, I thought, were an interesting discussion because on the surface you say, well, what's the big deal about banning cell phones because you shouldn't be using them anyway? But you've got parents that say, well, I want to have access to my kid anytime. And you've got teachers who are actually telling the kids in the classroom to use the cell phone to search the internet because the school Chromebooks are so limited in what their internet research can be.
Yeah, I'm told by people who are teaching that the phones in the classroom now are a big problem, that any teacher who's trying to teach a lesson can see the kids that are on their phones while she or he is trying to teach. And I don't think that's optimum. The kids are already glued to the phones like the rest of us are glued to the phones all the time. And, I don't know if the pouches are the perfect solution because I've heard things that can go wrong with them. But you know, that it is a problem, and I don't, you know what the solution is. I don't blame the city for trying to get a handle on it. Like, you know, I think, you know, the other interesting thing I think that happened this week was the Surgeon General, I think, recommended that cell phones come with warning labels. And I think that they do need to have warning labels, particularly for children. You know, there is just no way that the social media companies have found to regulate their content adequately. And, you know, I think even the best parent who's trying to keep track, you know, it's hard. Like, you know, I mean, are you going to totally restrict your kid's things so he can't, you know, have access to things that other kids are looking at? Or are you going to just say, no, look at anything you want, which you probably don't want to do? So,
I mean, every week there's stories in the news about kids that have run away from home or kids who have unfortunately, you know, taken their own life. And a lot of it relates back to bullying, and it's not bullying in person. You know, bullying, everybody's like, well, I teach my kid to stand up for themselves. Okay, that works fine when it's a in-person, face-to-face bullying, but when they're bullying you online, there's not much that you can do about it.
Yeah, and bullying, when you and I were in school, like, it's on the playground and there's a few kids around and you're embarrassed and then it's gone. Bullying on the internet is to a wide audience, and it's indelible. It doesn't go away. I think it's bullying on steroids, from what we were used to.
And there was, it was different, at least in my day and probably in your day as well, because that bully, every other kid realized that that kid was a bully. And every other kid tried to, so you had sympathy from them. If you got bullied by the bully, they probably had been too. So there was like this network of people that kind of ignored the bully and said, oh, they're just a jerk. But with the social media bullying, everybody's watching and everybody kind of joins in, whether they are, you know, actively participating or not, but they're not turning a blind eye to it like you might on the playground. They're keeping it's keeping their focus, and it's becoming more of a topic of conversation, which only proliferates whatever it is the bully is saying.
Yeah, and if you think about it, these are kids. You know, these are kids having to read these comments about themselves. Like, you know, I just can't think of a worse situation. So the Surgeon General's recommendation that it should come with warnings. You know, I mean, some people are saying that no cell phones until past middle school. I think that boat may have sailed, but it's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, and it's all dependent on, you know, at least from the school perspective and how they can handle it in the school. It's all dependent on being able to provide them a structure where they don't need the phone. And that's the argument they're having in New Bedford, is that the kids and some of the faculty are saying, well, they need it because their search ability to get to certain, it was only until, I think it said last year or the year before, they could actually download PDFs. And how many research documents do you and I find all the time? They're in PDF format. So the fact that they couldn't access the things that they needed, they were telling them to use the phone instead. That seems like a pretty easy fix. Just whitelist more of those sites on the school's security system so that they can actually access those sites on the Chromebook.
Yeah, I would agree. And as far as a parent needing to reach a kid in an emergency, well, they can do what they used to do, which is call the office, and the office will go get the kid.
Yeah, I kind of take issue with that reasoning too. That, you know, oh, well, I want to be able to reach my kid, and I want my kid to be able to reach me. Like, why? What is going on that you need to distract them from learning? And then the you get the parents that say, well, what if something happens? What if somebody shows up at the school with a gun? Well, the statistic possibility of that is very, very minute. And I don't think that you need to set the school policy based on that potential, based on that possibility. You know, and people argue with me about that all the time, but it's not as common as the news makes it seem.
Yeah, I mean, if you really just think about what a cell phone is, it's a powerful computer in our pockets. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's just a powerful, powerful item. It has changed society in every sense. It has changed the way we live, the way we shop, the way we communicate. I mean, I don't know, with my family and friends, like, you no longer call somebody. You have to text them first. It's like, you know, are you busy? Can I
damn
call?
Damn right you,
like,
do, yeah.
I mean, you know, And you know, in very recent past, you didn't do that. In very recent past, you just called someone, like,
I mean, before I was a, no, text me, don't call me person. I was a leave me a voicemail person. So I've been trying to avoid phone calls for a long time, except for you out there, 508-996-0500. If you want to call in and speak with Jack and I, or you can send app chat messages or open line voicemails in the WBSM app. But I think that you mentioned the fact that it's a computer, and that's another concern that a lot of people have is, you know, how much learning are they doing if they're just Googling things on their phone? And if they're, you know, if they don't know the answer to a test, instead of having to memorize it, they know that they've got their phone in their pocket and they can just reach into their, you know, under their desk and search for the answer. I get that. But also, I came from the generation where we were the first kids that were allowed to use calculators on the SAT. So there will be changes in the way that we learn and the way we utilize the learning tools that we have as we go forward.
Yeah. And also, we're just at the cusp of, we already have a problem with misinformation on the internet, but mm-hmm. with artificial intelligence and stuff like that, we're not even going to be knowing, you know, who wrote and what where it's from. It's a whole new era, and it's going to be a lot of challenges.
I did see a great argument that was made about cell phones, you know, giving people an excuse not to learn things. And the person who was defending the cell phone, we'll call it. But what they were saying was, no, what cell phones do having the internet available to the student, no matter how it is, Chromebook or whatever, what that does doesn't make it easy for them to cheat. It makes it harder for you to devise the lesson plan, because it's no longer about just memorizing facts and figures, which is useless anyway, and more about now you've got to gear the testing toward analysis. So instead of saying, you know, in what year was, you know, the Battle of Bunker Hill, you want to give them a question that says, you know, talk about how the Battle of Bunker Hill led to whatever. You know what I mean? So it's not, you've got to get people out of that mindset of memorizing facts and figures, because what has that ever done for you and I? You know, but what does the analysis help us in the future?
Well, I'm inclined to push back a little bit on that, because I know myself, like when I have to add or multiply something, I still do it out longhand, and then I do it by the calculator to check my math, you know, because I can be wrong. But I think there is some value to knowing how to do the fundamental things, whether it's cursive writing or adding and subtracting, or having certain dates at your fingertip. I think that the internet is amplification. You know, it's sort of like in writing. You can tell the difference between a person who knows how to write and a person who doesn't know how to write very well, because usually a person who knows how to write is a big reader, because they have the skills. And when a person who knows how to write breaks the rules, they break them because they know what the rules are. And so it's informed, it's intelligent. I do worry a little bit about everything being done for us. I think we have to have that, because you're not going to, human nature being what it is, you're not going to be able to get away from it. But I think there is some value in the old things. I'm also interested. There are people out there who don't use cell phones, who don't use computers. Like, maybe they have a flip phone or something, but they just have opted out. My brother, one of my brothers, is one of them, and he's perfectly intelligent. He, you know, smarter than I am, could do these things if he wanted to. He just doesn't want to partake in that world. And I think there are people out there that don't. They go to the library. They read traditional newspapers, if they can find them nowadays. I think that's interesting to me, people who have just opted out.
My dad has no interest in social media at all. And even though I tell him, like, hey, you know, you could reconnect with people, you could actually, like, you know, people of life, he has no desire to be part of it. Although he still knows everything that happens on Facebook, because my mom has it. So she'll be like, look at this, look at this, look at that. But I mean, for the most part, he's the same way. He goes, I know it's there if there's something that I want to look up. Mm-hmm. And certainly I entertain myself when I come home in the morning, because he works overnight. When I come home in the morning and I'm eating something before I go to bed, I'm going to be reading news stories on the phone or whatever. Mm-hmm. He's like, but it's not something that he's dependent on.
He doesn't live on it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I will, like, he'll call me and ask me questions, and I'll say, did you just Google that? Because, you know, but he'd rather call me and ask me for help than to Google it,
yeah.
Which you know. Well, we got to take a break here. 508-996-0500. We'll be talking about some more things with Jack, including the story that New Bedford Light had about the city clamping down on sober homes and lodging houses. So we'll talk about that and more coming up in just a bit. We'll be right back after these messages. All right, it is time to go into the newsroom and get all the headlines of the day from Phil Devitt. On the other side of that, we'll talk more with Jack Spillane and more with you at 508-996-0500. You can also use App Chat on the WBSM app. But right now, let's go into the newsroom with Phil Devitt.
Record heat around the world and deaths as a result. Lindsey Graham slams Biden's immigration plan. And the world's ugliest dog has been crowned.
From the WBSM newsroom, this is WBSM News.
Hundreds of temperature records are breaking as extreme heat grips much of the planet. More than 1,400 records fell this past week. The heat has led to tragedy as more than 1,000 Muslim pilgrims have died while making the Hajj journey to Mecca. Here in the U.S., more than 100 million people are under heat advisories. Today marks 2 years since Roe v. Wade was overturned by the Supreme Court. The landmark decision ended the constitutional right for an abortion and gave states the option to decide on restricting access or not. Over a dozen states have stopped almost all abortion services, with another three utilizing six-week bans. Senator Lindsey Graham is slamming President Biden over his latest action allowing certain undocumented immigrants married to U.S. citizens to stay in the country. In an interview on Fox News Sunday, the South Carolina Republican called Biden's decision a, quote, disaster, adding that Biden unilaterally gave 500,000 people legal status. Graham said the current border policies are a massive downgrade.
The reason the border's broken is Biden chose to overturn every policy Trump had. We had the most secure border in December 2020, the most lawless border now because of policy changes by Biden.
Graham argued the move would incentivize more migrants to cross into the U.S. illegally. The executive order allows non-citizens who've been in the country for at least 10 years and are married to a U.S. citizen to apply for permanent residence without leaving the country. Federal prosecutors are recommending criminal charges against Boeing for violating a 2021 settlement related to two fatal crashes. The settlement followed a pair of crashes that related to defects in the Boeing 737 MAX 8 aircraft, with nearly 350 people killed in 2018 and 2019. President Biden and former President Trump are gearing up for their first debate this coming Thursday. Mark Mayfield with the details.
Biden has been meeting with advisors at Camp David. Trump, meanwhile, held a rally in Philadelphia on Saturday and spoke to a gathering of Christian conservatives in the nation's capital that was organized by the Faith and Freedom Coalition. He made a point of stressing his position on abortion, saying he believes that states should set their own rules. Trump also teased over the weekend that he's settled on a running mate, but made no official announcement. I'm Mark Mayfield.
A new study links the use of cannabis to an increased risk of more serious COVID outcomes. Tammy Trujillo has details.
Researchers at the Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis say the risks are similar to what could be expected to be seen in tobacco users and include the possibility of ICU admissions. Their study was based on outcomes among more than 72,000 people in the Midwest during the first 2 years of the pandemic. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
Inside Out 2 continues to dominate the box office. The animated sequel added $100 million in its second weekend of release and is now the highest grossing North American release of the year. And an 8-year-old Pekingese from Oregon has been named the world's ugliest dog. The annual contest was held Friday in Northern California, and top honors went to the black and white Pekingese named Wild Thang, whose tongue sticks out permanently because his teeth did not grow in properly.
WBSM Sports.
Red Sox came away with a series victory after topping the Reds 7-4 to win their rubber match. Sox host the Toronto Blue Jays for a 3-game set that begins tonight at Fenway Park with the first pitch at 7:10. And for those of you paying attention, Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals is tonight with a series tied. Edmonton Oilers and the Florida Panthers tonight at 8.
Now, your ABC 6 South Coast forecast, brought to you by C Street.
Clouds giving way to a mostly sunny sky today. Temperatures climbing into the 80s here on the South Coast with high humidity. Dangerous surf at beaches, an advisory in effect through 7 p.m. Humidity breaks on Tuesday with mostly sunny skies again and highs in the 80s. Weather on WBSM is brought to you by SeaStreak. Whether it's a daycation or a staycation, get there with SeaStreak. Visit SeaStreak.com for reservations to Martha's Vineyard or Nantucket. I'm Phil Devitt for WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's news talk station, WBSM, and get all of our content and breaking news alerts with the WBSM app.
And welcome back in. We are turning on the light with Jack Spillane of New Bedford Light tomorrow morning. If you missed me talking about it earlier, tomorrow I'll be broadcasting live from Rochelle's in Acushnet. So if you want to come on by and have some breakfast with me, you can do that. I'll be there from 6 to 9. They open at 6:30. So you can join us and have some breakfast. And then, of course, at 9 a.m., we'll have a Seize the Deal opportunity for you that'll be going on sale at seizethedeal.com, as we do with all these live shows that we do. So you can save yourself some money. And let me just see if I can pull up that deal and let you know exactly what you're going to get. You're going to get $50 in gift certificates to Rochelle's for just $25 tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. It's actually going to go on sale at 8 a.m. So you don't have to wait for the end of the show. You can get it at 8 a.m. tomorrow. All right. So we are turning on the light with Jack. And Jack, a really in-depth story this week in the New Bedford Light by Grace Ferguson and Arthur Hirsch, how the city is clamping down on sober homes and lodging houses. The sober home discussion has been ongoing here on the air for quite a while now. And the question kept coming up about, when's the city going to do something about this? When's the city going to do something about this? And it turns out they have been doing something about it just behind the scenes.
Yeah, the city has been doing exactly what some of the vocal critics have been calling for. And that is applying some of the rooming house rules to sober houses, which seems to me to be a good way to go. About a year ago, after a terrible fire in Acushnet Avenue, you may remember at the rooming house right next to St. Anthony's, the city strengthened its, appropriately, because they were not being very strictly enforced, its rooming house, particularly the fire regulations. And so now they're going to apply those to sober homes on the theory that the sober homes are a form of rooming house. There's been some pushback from that. In the article, which was an excellent, very comprehensive article by Grace Ferguson and Arthur Hirsch, one of the sober house owners said, "We are not a rooming house. Rooming house is open to any member of the public who walks in and wants to rent a room. We only rent to people who are recovering from substance abuse." Whether they can successfully fight that in court, I don't know. There has been a second highest court decision in Massachusetts that allows the cities and towns to regulate sober homes in this way. So that is the issue. You know, of course, we saw this rise when a sober home opened up right down the street from the mayor and some of the big movers and shakers in the city on Moreland Terrace, one of the nicest neighborhoods in New Bedford. I do think that, I was thinking about this on the way over. It raises some interesting issues about how we treat people with in addiction recovery, because anybody who knows about addiction recovery knows that it is not a clear line of recovery. There's often relapses that occur, and people who are living in residential neighborhoods have legitimate concerns about that. So, what is the balance between, a neighborhood that can accept a sober home or a rooming house? My fear is that what happens inevitably is that middle-class neighborhoods organize and resist these things. And so they all end up in lower-income neighborhoods where the ability of people to organize is less. Now, maybe that's the way things are. I live in a neighborhood where there are lots of rooming houses, although some of them are well-run, some of them not well-run. I know that on my street, we organized when there was going to be a rooming house because we felt that the street was so compact that it would really be detrimental. So I can understand both sides of this issue, but it does seem like the city was actively engaged in addressing it, even though some of the critics were speaking as if nothing was being done.
And the purpose of locating them in these other neighborhoods is because you're trying to put them in a place where they'll be the best surrounded by the environs that will help them in their recovery. You put somebody in, you know, like, let's just say you had to open this in the near North End. Well, there's a lot of bars, there's a lot of liquor stores, there's a lot of temptations there, there's a lot of distractions there, there's a lot of things that would keep people from that path to getting better that they could get in a more serene neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah. Let's also be frank that this is a money-making opportunity. And the way the rules are written now, someone can purchase a home, and there is an incentive to purchasing a nice home in a nice neighborhood if you want to attract people, particularly a good quality person. And then you attract these people who are in recovery. You can make a huge amount of money by, charging them all. It's not exactly clear to me why people in sober homes, because there's no programming, are paying more money than people in rooming houses, except that rooming houses tend to be in more low-income neighborhoods. Not always, but oftentimes. Foreign Mayor Lang has talked about they're proliferating, and they are proliferating. How do we used to handle people that were in recovery? There weren't a lot of services. People either got sober or they didn't. They either ended up on the street or they didn't. It does seem like the problem is exponentially greater than it used to be. It's not an easy problem, and I think that. But I do think that some it's a capitalist system we live in America, and some enterprising people have noticed that there's a lot of money to be made in these sober homes, and so they've bought very nice homes in nice neighborhoods to try to establish them.
So let's take the different regulations they're trying to crack down on. Let's take one at a time. So in calling them lodging facilities and requiring them to have lodging licenses and therefore go by all of those codes that would be associated with that, what are your thoughts on that? Are they lodging houses?
Well, they say that they're not. They say that they're sober houses and that they don't accept anybody.
But what do you think?
I think there are some aspects of them that look like lodging houses and some aspects not. I do think that it will be interesting to see how the federal regulations that you can't discriminate against someone who's suffering from an illness and substance abuse is now classified as an illness. And I do think you have to be very careful when you talk about let's enforce the regulations harder against them. That's a loser in court, I think, because someone's going to come in, some enterprising lawyer is going to come in and say, my client is being targeted because of what he or she does in running this sober house. And you can't use the rooming house laws stricter against sober houses than you would against another rooming house or against a normal dwelling. So I think that there's been some loose talk about let's just enforce the hell out of them, as opposed, maybe if you're going to enforce the hell out of everybody, but I don't think that's what the city wants to do. It's a tricky problem.
Why don't we take a break here? When we come back, I'll bring up the other side of it, which is the sprinkler requirement. So we'll talk about that when we come back. We'll take your calls, 508-996-0500. We'll be back with more with Jack Spillane in just a few moments. Come back in. We are turning on the light with Jack Spillane. And speaking of turning on lights, and I'm looking out the window, and finally the clouds have parted. The sun has come out. And when I see the sun, I think about solar power. And especially if you were running your air conditioners all for the last couple of days with all the heat and humidity, and you're thinking to yourself, you're like Joe Exotic, I'm never going to financially recover from this. Well, can you really save money by going solar? Can you really get paid to go solar? All these questions that you have about it that you really can't find a real simple, honest, direct answer. You go online, you Google it, but you don't know what's a real article, what's actual information, what's just put up there by AI, what's put up there as propaganda by a company. You don't know. But there is one company that will give you simple, honest, direct, and transparent answers. That is Isaacson Solar. They are local. They're based in Fall River, and they are here to stay. So they are your partner in solar power for your home. So what you want to do is you want to reach out to them by going to their website, isaacsonsolar.com. They'll come out. They'll take a look at your home. They'll tell you if solar is a good fit for you. If they might say, hey, listen, I don't think you're a good fit. Maybe not for you. And then you can just part ways and everybody's happy. But if you are a good fit, they'll sit down with you, they'll talk to you, and then they'll give you a free no obligation quote. So get the ball rolling now by visiting isaacsonsolar.com, I-S-A-K-S-E-N, isaacsonsolar.com, and find out if solar is right for you. So Jack, the sun is shining out here. So if you need to pull the blinds down, feel free to get up and do that. We were talking before about these code enforcements, the way that the city is trying to clamp down on sober houses. And one of them is by enforcing the need for sprinklers. And the people who own these sober houses are saying, well, wait a minute, you know, we're just a rental facility like anybody else, and you don't make other apartment buildings carry them in the city. So what are your thoughts on the sprinklers? Because I know you had a lot to say about this in terms of the rooming houses when that fire happened.
Yeah. So at the time of the fire, many of the rooming houses were not sprinklered, and the city was not being aggressive enough in getting them sprinklered. The New Bedford Light, I'm proud to say, gave them a hard time about that. And they did update the regulations. I think that the sober houses may be on a little bit of weaker ground on this argument because they are basically renting rooms in a residence. They're not renting an apartment, you know, so that, and you have an intensification of use. So say you have like a 3-bedroom house that you modify into being like a 7-bedroom because you use, you know, more rooms for bedrooms and you just have the living room and the kitchen otherwise. So now you're an intensification of use. You're really renting rooms more than apartments. It begins to look like a duck, quack like a duck. You know, is it a duck? I understand that they're in shock, that they would have to, you know, because a lot of these people have figured out, as I said, that this is a way to make a lot of money by, instead of renting 2 apartments, renting 8 rooms. And you know, that's the system. The system is regulated, and the city has a right to do that.
And by the way, so people understand if they are new to the sober house discussion, these aren't treatment centers. These aren't rehab facilities. There's no programming going on here for these folks. If there is, it might be because somebody goes to these places and brings that program, but that's not part of why people are living in these situations.
Yeah, what has happened is that when people finish their rehab, they're still in a shaky situation. They're still not quite, they still don't quite have the sobriety that allows them maybe to rent an apartment, have a full-time job, and so they need another transition. But the people who are running these things have the best of both worlds. They get to have the advantage of renting to a disabled population without having to provide any disabled services. And, you know, and there are relapses. And as we've seen from the comments of some of the city councilors, some of these homes are run well and some of them are not. And so, you know, the fact that they would have to sprinkler their buildings because of that, I think it's interesting because now you're going to be taking a nice house that has just been modified a little bit to have the extra rooms and having to have a sprinkler system everywhere. It'll affect the way that house looks. But they are running a rooming house in a certain extent. It's a specific type of rooming house, but
a question that does come up, and I'm sure it changes on a case-to-case basis, is who is paying for these people to stay in these homes? Is it coming from them? Is it coming from family? Is it coming from insurance? Who's covering the cost of being the renters of these rooms?
Yeah, I can't profess to be an expert on that. My sense is that a lot of the people are on disability, but probably not all. It is a problem. You know, insurance doesn't, you know, allow you to stay in rehab as long as people think you might need to be. And, you know, you have these sober houses that have sprung up to fill a need, but it's a need that residential neighborhoods are not used to and that society is not used to. And is this just going to be a new thing that finally we come to accept, or is it going to, and we just have to make sure that they run well, or is it going to be something that just cannot coexist with residential neighborhoods?
And let's look at it from a perspective of this. If there was a 3-bedroom home in a residential neighborhood and the town or the city caught wind of there being, you know, 12 people living in that 3-bedroom home, they might knock on the door. they might knock on the door and find out, you know, I understand that you have a right to your own privacy, but they also have, you know, enforcement of certain codes that have to be followed that they need to check up on. So it's not like a regular residence wouldn't be prone to some question and inspection.
Yeah, I think it depends on the neighborhood. I mean, you know, I grew up in a three and then a four bedroom home with 10 people, you know, because we had eight kids and we were sharing bedrooms. But we're all related. We're mm-hmm. all blood relatives. What happens when they're not blood relatives living in that kind of intensified situation? You actually have exactly that situation in the city right now with immigrants. Immigrants often live 10, 12 to a two or three bedroom apartment, and they just share, and they live in a manner that is maybe not unusual in the third world, but is unusual in this country. And a lot of them go to work. They're sharing bedrooms with people that they're not related to. And they just live that way because you do what you have to do, you know, when you have to. I talk sometimes about my Irish grandmother and the fact that she ran a dormitory type thing for Irish women when they came from the old country and they had not yet made their way into society. Most of them were working as maids. And on the top floor of her house, she had, you know, three or four, you know, unrelated Irish ladies living together. You know, so
I mean, I know somebody who rents a room and shares that room with somebody else because even the room rental was like $800 a month. So he was able to save a little money by splitting it with somebody else. He works overnights. That person works days. So what they do is one person sleeps in the bed while the other person's at work, and then the other person sleeps in the bed when they come home. And I was like, that would drive me crazy.
In the Navy, they call it hot bunking submarines, where you share a bunk. Like, yeah, I hope you're changing the sheets, but
you know. I don't know how you could do it, but he says, you know what, I've got that extra $400 in my pocket every month. That's all that I think about.
Just so. Think about that a room now is $800 a month. That's a room, not an apartment. An apartment is $1,200 if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different world out there. You know, I think a lot of us are used to living in the world as it existed between, say, 1945 and 2010, and we're evolving into a different world. And
absolutely. Got to take a break here. We'll be back in just a few moments. We can discuss next week when you come back.
Absolutely.
But you have been doing, the New Bedford Light has been doing a lot of different community conversations with people.
Yes. Yeah, we did one last week on the announcement that commuter rail will now be delayed until next May. So those of you who have been following it, which is everybody, this is the third delay. It was supposed to come last fall. Then it was supposed to come in July. And now it's been moved back to May. And this is just the latest iterations of this because, as we know, we've been talking about this since 1999. And if not before, 1991, I think. So commuter rail is always coming, but it never arrives. I do think that it will arrive because the tracks have been laid this time. The state has spent tens of millions of dollars on it. But, you know, it's a complex project. But I guess my objection would be, okay, if it's a complex project, you know, just say when people say, when is it coming? Just say, we're not sure. Because like any other complex construction project, it's hard to predict what you don't anticipate, problems that arise, and just say we're not sure, like, you know.
And as some of the people were commenting, there are still folks that don't believe that it's actually going to happen.
Yeah, there are still people who say it's not going to happen. I think that's sort of like a fashionable thing, like, you know, when people say they're all corrupt or I don't believe anything or it's never going to happen. It's just, I mean, they spend too much money now. It's going to happen.
Yeah. There's actual stations built and all of that. So, well, we can talk more with Jack next week. Of course, you can read his articles, his columns at newbedfordlight.org and all the great work they do over there. And of course, you always have ways for people to interact with you as well, for people to have their voices heard. But that's going to be it for us. So you don't have any time for your voice to be heard with us, but that's our.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.